So I'd like to call the meeting to order for the Health, Safety, and Emergency Preparedness Committee here at Skyline College. Just so that I'm able to navigate everything, if you want to be recognized, please raise your hand and I'd be more than happy to call on you at that time. So if I could just ask you to please do that and not jump in without raising your hand. So the meeting is called to order. So the first thing is the approval of the agenda. I would need someone to make a motion and then someone has to do a second.
Jim Vangeli, I'll make a motion to approve.
Great, thanks, Jim. Do I have a second?
Musa Ganma, second.
I have a second. Is there any discussion on that? Hearing none, I'll call for the question. All those in favor, please use the raise hand function. Great, thank you. Appreciate it. Is anyone opposed? Please use the raise hand function. Musin, Tara, do you oppose?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
Not a problem. Okay, seeing no opposition, the agenda is adopted. So let's do the minutes one by one, not as a combined. So for the meeting minutes for September 2nd, 2001, can I have a motion to approve?
Jim Vangeli, motion to approve.
Jim, motion to approve. Can I have a second? Jessica seconds. Thanks for putting it in the chat, Jessica, or it makes it easier for me. Any discussion on the September 2nd minutes? Don't see any hands up. All right, so let's go on ahead, call the question for that. All those to approve the September 2nd minutes, please use the raise hand function. Perfect. I appreciate it, everyone. Thank you. Right. Let's lower those hands. Is there anyone that is opposed? Please raise your hand. My hand. Jessica, are you opposed?
Oh, no, sorry.
Okay, not a problem. Okay, none opposed. September 2nd passes. Okay, now October 7th, can I have a motion to approve?
Jim Vangeli, motion to approve.
Jim, you're our motioner, and Jessica's our seconder. Oh, but she has some proposed changes. Okay, so Jessica, could you second it first, and then you can propose the changes that you've got. Is that okay?
Oh, I don't want to approve them until they're amended.
No, and they won't be approved. By making the second, it allows us to discuss it and amend it.
Got it.
Okay, perfect. So what are your proposed changes?
Oh, sure. Thank you so much, everyone. So I'd like to start the minutes just by reflecting on the top of the minutes that the time say 1 to 2 p.m., which was the original time that the meeting was scheduled, instead of 1:30 to 3. The next change is I would like for our minutes to reflect the committee members who were present. Should I keep going?
Yeah, you can, or if you've got it in a document, you can share the document. I think we have the share screen is working, if you'd want to do that.
I think I have it in a Google Doc instead of a Word, but
okay. That's fine. Then just go on through it. That's fine.
Okay. There's not too many. Under Roman numeral 5, new business, So this was actually issues and concerns about the safe return to campus from faculty as proposed by AFT, or something like additions to agenda requested by AFT. I just want to get that in there as a title, since I don't really consider that it was new business. It was more of a feedback or roundtable. But and then in that first paragraph that starts committee representative from AFT, and then the second sentence, the committee member, I would like that to say my name. I'm paid to be here, so that should say Jessica Silversharp. And then in the next sentence, could just say she, start with she. And then one more sentence down, it says another committee member, and that would be Lori Slickton. And then Joe, I did send you this draft ahead of time.
Right.
And then, so in the same section, let's see, the fifth bullet point starts, a committee member reported that in response to concerns. And I just want to insert the word of counselors. This is because AFT is representing counselors here. And then I think just one more, almost at the very, very end of the minutes, it says, subsequently, the president met with the group and communicated in writing with that group. So this is all counseling. I think it should be named and then include, as the counseling dean was not present, Ray Hernandez deferred on answering specific questions voiced by counselors.
Okay.
And that's it.
That's fine. So what I need now is, and Jessica, if you could email that to Paul. So we have. Yeah.
Oh, I have. Great.
So we can do that. So as an amendment now, what I would need is, Jim, you did the motion to approve. I would need you to say that you are okay with the changes that Jessica has proposed, and then I would need a second to that.
I think I'm okay with all of them, except for maybe the Ray Hernandez one might need a little explaining. I think maybe that Ray deferred to district or deferred to Board of Trustees or something. Just to say he deferred and then leave it at that kind of leaves it empty.
Okay.
I think what happened was because that piece was in progress, Ray didn't want to speak for the Dean of Counseling in response to certain questions that were voiced.
So I'm fine if we include an explanation. I just didn't want to leave it hanging like Ray didn't answer it, because I thought he was addressing everything appropriately.
Yeah, I was, but I would just say because the counseling meeting wasn't there, I could not speak to the technical aspects that they were talking about at that meeting. I think the language to defer to the counseling dean is sufficient. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Then I'll second then with that inclusion.
So Jessica, you were the original second. Are you good with that?
I am. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So let's vote. So what we're voting now is to approve those October 7 minutes with the changes proposed. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Perfect. Great. Is anyone opposed? I don't see anyone opposed. Very good. So that passes as well. Standing reports, Health Center, Donna. Donna, do you have a standing report for us? Are you able to unmute? Okay, so what I'm gonna do is, Donna, I'll come back to you. Why don't we do facilities with John Doctor. John?
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Building two, DSA should be approved by the end of November. Building 19B wing restrooms are open. A wing restrooms should be open by the end of this week. College Ridge faculty staff housing should be completed by midsummer next year. Building one's renovation, the state architects have approved that project for building one. And that's it for facilities.
Thanks, John. Any questions for John from the committee? Non-committee members, any questions? You have to raise your hand. Okay, great. Donna, are you able to give us a report? Okay, Donna, I'll come back to you again. Why don't we do public safety, Jim?
Public safety, I believe there is a link or a page to show that deals with the return to campus district website. Very helpful. It's well updated. Any questions, you can contact Ben Zara Minkin or myself. Pretty straightforward. And I will allot the rest of my time to answer any questions or concerns related to public safety.
So is there anyone that, may I ask a question to John? Lavinia did. Okay, hold on 1 second, Lavinia. First of all, are there any questions for Jim? And then I'll call on you, Lavinia. Are there any questions for Jim? Please raise your hand or you can put it in the chat.
Am I to assume that the link in the agenda is that return to campus that you're mentioning, Jim?
It is. I can tell you that Jim sent that link to Paul and I, and we put it in the agenda.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Correct.
So any other questions for Jim? Okay, for John, I'm gonna go back to you, John. Lavinia's first.
Yep.
Hi, John and everybody. Hi. You mentioned very briefly about building one. Could you possibly offer a little bit more specifics? It seems as if there is work to be completed and it's somewhat on schedule. And from what I understand about a previous meeting that I had attended, that the bulk of that work will be taking place in the spring, and there's some issues of, from what I remember, construction, perhaps maybe some disruptions, whatever it is that you can address, if it's appropriate for this committee, I would appreciate any clarity, given that my office is in that building.
Yeah.
And I understand there's gonna be significant work to be completed, and mm-hmm. just what do you know that you can share with us?
So, in the winter break, we're going to be doing renovations to the restrooms on the first, second, and third floor. So that's pretty major. And then in the starting of spring in February, we're going to start with the choral room, the kiln room, and those are to be demoed. And then we're also going to be starting with some foundation work for an elevator. So we're going to be demoing the elevator in spring. And let me see here. So we have restrooms, a photo lab on the third floor. We're going to start construction. Let's see here.
So that's quite a bit of work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a complete overhaul to me. My question then would be what are some, if you do know, in terms of safety, what are some of the plans for the individuals who may have offices, including myself and some other colleagues that may be here with me today? And I apologize, I came in late. So if you've addressed some of these, let me know and we can take them offline.
So we're supposed to be, the contractors is supposed to be visqueline. That means putting the plastic sheets up in their construction area. So that way the construction area does not lead, the air does not lead into the occupied areas. They're also going to be putting fans in there to make sure that the dust or dust doesn't go into the occupied spaces.
Mm-hmm. So in essence, I mean, they're taking as many precautions as possible.
Yes.
But there is still, I would assume, quite a bit of unknown details as to the extent of the disruption in the dust. Would that be fair for me to state?
We have moved people, we moved a few people from the first floor to go upstairs where next to the construction would be. So the elevator, I don't know if you know Jennifer Merrill. Her office space is by 124. We're going to be doing some elevator work near there. So we moved Jennifer Merrill and one other person up to the third floor. So that's one way to, if we're going to impact faculty and staff in classes, that is just one way that we will mitigate disruptions to faculty and staff and to the students. We have a meeting tomorrow with the architects. So we're gonna be doing a walkthrough. And I'm sure that we're gonna be meeting with faculty staff soon to go over the details a lot more.
Okay. No, thank you. I just know that any bit of construction that I'm involved with,
yeah,
usually multiply it by two and three times in terms of the time.
Yeah. So you're going to see a lot of contractors coming through. You will probably hear some noise from construction, but we're willing to work with faculty and staff to mitigate all of these construction issues.
Mm-hmm. Lavina,
what floor are you on?
I'm on the second floor, right across from what used to be the Career Center, but is now, I don't know, the last time I looked, it was empty, but it's the Equity Center.
Okay.
So, yeah, pretty much in the thick of it, so to speak, because even though you're in the middle, you know, this is not about me, but I'm just sharing that there's the restrooms that are doing, and we'll probably go into January. Let's really call it what it is, okay? Because that's the break. And then there's also the elevators. So my concern is access, noise, dust.
Yep.
And everything else, which, you know, is out of many of our control, but it's still important to talk about at this stage, because my division is moving to Pack Heights. We're already at capacity there. I'm one of the lucky ones, and let's put quotes around that I was to remain in building one, but now I'm building one. I mean, the whole campus is being altered in various ways.
That's so right.
Thank you for giving us the update.
I will speak with Nicole Porter, who's the dean for Building One, and I'll make sure that all this information gets passed down to faculty and staff.
And John, it would also be for counseling.
Yeah.
Because Lavinia will be with counseling, so it'll be Luis. I need to move us along so we can get.
And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Through the agenda. Donna told me she can't unmute, so we're not going to have an update from the health center. I apologize for that. And then I had talked with Ben Zara. We're going to defer on emergency preparedness. so we can move immediately into the updates part of our agenda. So of course, today is not our standard meeting day. We did this switch because the desire was to make sure that we had a 90-minute block in which to have this meeting. So we're going to need to make a decision moving forward here about the potential of switching to Monday. Some of the people that aren't here today is because Mondays don't work for them. So I'm being honest with you. But switching to Mondays as our meeting day and keeping this time from 2 to 3:30. Or our second option would be we could keep it on Thursdays, but that would mean probably starting at like 12:45 and finishing at 2:05. So that would be an 80-minute meeting. And the reason that we need to finish by 2:10 on Thursday is that first Thursday, Academic Senate and Classified Senate meet that day. So I'm fine with either, but it's really a committee decision. I tried to outline below at the bottom of the agenda what the dates would be, you know, in terms of what those changes would look like. Just so that you know, if we do choose the Mondays, the third Monday, we'd have to do some adjusting around just because the third Monday in December, we're in winter break. The third Monday in January is MLK holiday. The third Monday in February is President's Day holiday. So I listed some different dates there. So I'm open to a discussion on it, but then I'll need someone to make a motion for either the Monday or the Thursday. Please raise your hand and I'll call on you. Musa, go on ahead.
Yeah, I'll make a motion for Thursday. In the past, we had so many discussions about which day, and we all agreed on Thursday for it being actually the most, you know, feasible to us. And I think during COVID, the 90 minutes is important, but, you know, we always were happy with our 1 hour during normal, you know, normal times. Thank you.
So I have that motion. Is there a second?
I second Joe Brian Tupper.
There's a motion in the chat.
Oh, where's the chat? So hold on 1 second. Perhaps 12:30 to two. And I'm fine. We can do it. The tough thing with 12:30 is most faculty classes on Tuesday, Thursday finish at 12:35. That's why I said 12:45, but I'd even be willing to go 12:40 to 2:05. It's just, I don't know that I can get 90 straight minutes, but I think we can get very close to that, right? I think we could get to 80, 85 minutes.
Hey, Joe, I would just think we have to be careful encroaching on people's lunch hours. It's mandatory by labor code that they get a lunch hour. And I don't think having a meeting between 12 and 1 would be appropriate for that, especially for classified staff.
And there are classified reps on here, so if that's an issue, I'm just trying
that's to just my 2 cents on that. That's all.
No, I'm just trying to get us to where we can have the length of meeting that I think people desire. But I also heard the desire about keeping it, you know, on that Thursday. So there was one about 12:40 to 2:05. I see that in the chat. So what do people think? Please feel free to speak, because it's not my decision. Monday, if you wanted me, I'd prefer Monday. Monday works better for me, but I'm just one member of the committee. So that's what I said. I want it to be your choice.
Just going back to the origination of this whole thing, can we maybe consider taking a vote as to how many people favor staying with 60 minutes and how many people want 90?
What I say, Jim, on that is I think I want to stick with the longer period of time for now. I think it's important in terms of where we're at. I think what we're looking at is let's leave it at Thursday and go from like I said, I think 12:45 to 2:05 gives us 80 minutes, and then it'll be my responsibility to move us along. Or we go Monday 2 to 3:30. And like I said, is that 10 minutes material? I don't know. But like I said, for me personally, I'd love it to be Monday, but the motion on the floor is for Thursday. That's what we're going to vote on, right? And what I would say is Thursday, and then Musa, would you be open to make it from 12:45 to 2:05? Would that work on a Thursday?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Okay. So we're looking 12:45 to 2:05 on a Thursday. Is there any other discussion on that motion? And I've got some people saying Monday works better for them. Like I said, we're going to vote it one way or another. The motion on the floor is Thursday, 12:45 to 2:05. Why don't we, I'm going to call the question on it. So now we're going to vote. The motion on the floor is Thursday, 12:45 to 2:05. If you are in favor, please raise your hand. And this, I think, will be a close vote. So please leave your hand up. And Paul, I'm going to read these.
Can you repeat that again, Joe? I'm sorry.
Sure, not a problem. This is to meet on Thursdays from 12:45 to 2:05. And so that means our meeting, we would have one then that first week of December. And then these dates after that. So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the votes, Musa, myself, Marco, Alice, Chris, all. Golda, Tina, Lori, Jim, Kevin Chack.
And there's a thumbs up too.
If you've got it, Paul, that's great.
They changed it to a hands up. So now it's 11.
That's 11? Yeah. Okay. So we've got 11 in favor. If everyone who voted in favor can now lower their hand. Everyone's got their hand down. Okay. All those opposed, please raise your hand. Five.
I have five, Joe.
I have five. We have some abstentions in the chat, I see. Okay, so we're going to go then on Thursday, 12:45 to 2:05. And then our next meeting will be on Thursday, December. I've got my glasses like crooked here. I believe it's December 2nd. So Paul, that'll put it on you and I to get the minutes and the agenda out sooner. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Okay.
I appreciate it. So now next up is Ray Hernandez. Ray?
Thanks, Joe. Much appreciated. Hello, everybody. Happy Monday. Gosh, I can't believe it's already the middle of November. So three area groups I just want to update you to. One is, again, the COVID landscape. I know that that's a reoccurring theme. The second is just to talk about the COVID testing, and particularly for employees that will be required to go through testing and what that's going to look like on the Skylink Pledge campus. And then the third piece is looking at just the student attestation and any things around that piece. So can I start sharing my screen, Joe?
Sure, Paul, if Ray could have the access.
So always like to start with where the state and the county is, just to remind us, you know, where things are at and why we have procedures as we do. And same as I've done with Kenyatta and at CSM, and I'm still waiting to start my screen sharing.
So Paul, Ray have access?
Excellent. Yes, thank you.
All good. So as we know, back in June, from both the state public health department and from Cal OSHA, that on June 15th, these items were rescinded and they continue to be rescinded. So that's physical distancing, capacities on business. We are a business in the academic arena, and then the county tier system. And so with those, that still moves forward. That's not a requirement as we move forward into our operations. So we are, you know, back to normal operations in terms of our capacities and how we're running things. So just as a reminder in that piece. The second goes to the county tier system. So while the county did, or the state did remove the county tier system, our Bay Area counties have come back into, and actually let me put these in the chat just so you have those. So this is here from the state public health department in terms of the reopening. And then the county has on their website metrics that they have talked to the Bay Area counties. And so they're really trying to standardize what it looks like in terms of the current face covering mandates and what kinds of metrics they're looking at. So in that, they have an indoor mask mandate dashboard. And so this is what I'm keeping an eye on and certainly giving feedback to the different constituencies and to leadership as well. And so there are three main metrics. And these metrics, while they introduced them about a month ago, they've been refining them as they've been having conversations. And so you'll see the three main metrics are county transmissions, severity of disease, and vaccination. And I'll first start in the right with the vaccinations. And so they just updated their definition. And you can see here at the bottom where it says note that the definition of vaccination now is including everybody in the county, not just those who are eligible. So because of that, our vaccination rate has gone from above 90 to now about 70, almost 74%. And the metric that is being looked at is a goal of 80% vaccination rate. And so they give you a visual for that goal. That continues to increase slowly. However, with the introduction of vaccinations for 5 through 11, we're gonna see that start to ramp up again. And I think by the end of the year, we'll reach the 80%. And the other metric is that 8 weeks have passed since the authorization for 5 to 11-year-olds. So we're looking at probably a maximum of 7 weeks before we meet that goal. So just to say, even if we don't get to the vaccination of 80%, because the 5 to 11-year-old vaccination availability is there, we're now in a countdown. And so by December 29th, we should reach that metric at the latest. We could reach it sooner if our full vaccination rate reaches above 80%. Now, again, I want to remind us the vaccinations are doing what they are intended. And while it doesn't make risk zero, we will never have risk of zero, unfortunately. And this is what we're going to be living with. But in our county, our severity of disease is very low in terms of those who get very sick, needing hospitalization and to death. And so we've been extremely stable and in the green, meeting the severity of disease. And so I kind of went this way because it's really this left-hand side that really is gonna be the telltale sign, and it's important for us to know where it lies. So I've seen the AFT proposals and, you know, looking at the continued mask mandate or having some other proposed metrics, but these metrics have really been vetted. They've been vetted by the experts and they're really looking at a balanced approach. And so when we look at the community transmission, the state or the county is now abiding by the CDC website. And the CDC website for the metric is looking that we're in the yellow tier and we're in that tier consistently for 3 weeks. And so if we go to the CDC website and look at where we're at, and just as a reminder, what I was showing you on the county website, it was last updated the end of last week, so it is not current. And what we're seeing on the CDC data cracker is current. So we are not in the yellow right now, and we slip back up into the orange, which means that that 3-week clock is going to reset once we get back into the yellow. So just to say that we are still a bit a ways from meeting that metric. And here's what that metric looks like right now. The total color range is from red, orange to yellow. And we just moved from the yellow to the orange. And just so you can see what things are looking like, here is our graph for the 7-day moving average. And you can see that we've had an uptick in our numbers. And that can be accounted for by we're getting into cold weather, more people are moving indoors. There's a bit of a laxity in that. So for different reasons, we're seeing that uptick. And so we'll continue to monitor that. But I just wanted to share that with this group. And I've been very intentional to really go into detail with this, with all the health and safety folks and any of the leadership groups that I certainly speak to. I think those are kind of the broad landscape. And before we go into our college and employees COVID testing, I'll pause right here just for any questions people might have just about that piece. Going once, going twice.
And Ray, just an FYI, we've got 9 more minutes left total for you, because then I need to get on to the next.
Okay. Yeah, and the other two, I shouldn't take too long in those. So the second piece was just the COVID testing launch, and we're set to launch on November 29th. And so right now, human resources is messaging those employees who are required to go through testing if they've received a medical or religious exemption. And then we are stationing a program specialist on all 3 campuses. And I just want to introduce the person that will be stationed on our campus physically on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays for the employee testing is Tristan Kunha. And I'll put his information here in the chat for you. And so right now, the program specialists are going through the attestations for students. They are also answering questions for anybody that has questions for the email or voicemail that is associated with the COVID-19 hotline. I'll get that information to you after I finish the presentation here. I'll have to look that up and put it in there. And so for the fall, this person will be stationed on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. We're finalizing those hours. We will start the COVID testing once the employees have been notified. The program specialist will then be contacting next week the employee directly to go through the process. And so an overview of that process quickly is we're making it very flexible for the employees. So employees will register on the site for Virus Geeks, which will be an in-house testing. They're only able to use the in-house testing because we have quick direct access to that portal and the results. So we can really monitor COVID testing. Employees will be trained in how to do that COVID testing so that if they want flexibility, then they can be trained, do the testing, and even when there are off hours, they will be able to drop off their tests at an agreed upon location, and so we can get that testing done. The turnaround time is guaranteed within 48 hours. However, with this third-party vendor, we've been seeing about 24 hours. Okay. Once we get to the spring and the students, then we are going to be expanding those services to be 5 days a week, and for those services to be available both day and evenings for our students who have gotten either medical or religious exemptions. And as you may have heard, that the board did consider the religious exemptions and of course granted them for all employees and all students. So the students now are going through
religious exemption process for those who would like to seek one. I think I will pause right there. I think that's enough information and just open it up to any questions on any of this information.
So please raise your, Lavinia, go on ahead.
Thank you. Ray, I just met with a student today who asked me, she said that she had heard about the religious exemptions possibly being accepted, and obviously, as you indicated, they are. But she asked me whether there would be any update that she could understand better for students whose parents have chosen as a family not to be vaccinated, if she could attend on-campus classes, if she is willing to have the testing as often as required. And I didn't know exactly what to answer her. I said that I would look into it, and thank you for being here today because I can ask you directly.
Yeah, no problem, appreciate the question. So I would say first off, you know, in the COVID website under students, we've updated the website to include now the sincerely held religious beliefs. So in order for students to qualify for in-person courses or services, they either must be fully vaccinated or they must have an approved medical or religious beliefs exemption. So that's the metric. So they would have to get one in order to be able to get the services and classes in person.
Okay.
And so here on this website, and I'll put it in the link. Right now, we're working on programming the religious exemptions to be part of the WebSmart selection, but for this week, it is not. We'll alert the campus community once it is integrated. But for now, in order to go through the religious beliefs exemption, the form is online. They click on the link to the form, they fill it out, and then they submit it directly to their VPSS. And in this case, it would be Newen here at Skyline College. And so right now we're doing a manual process until we're able to get it onto the WebSmart process. Okay. The so second piece, go on ahead, Lavinia.
I'm sorry, for clarification then, a student who is not, it's not a religious belief, nor is it medical, then they are going to be restricted
restricted to virtual classes and services.
Okay, so she then asked the next level, which is what I did. This is why I held up. Is there a process by which they can, as a family, appeal it? Because she said to me, and I don't want to get into the details and the, you know, the weeds of it, but she said, our values are honestly, genuinely, sincerely held beliefs.
Okay. And not so religiously that would be,
feeling, so that's
I understand. So the personal beliefs is not an option.
Okay.
Okay. So that one is not up for discussion in any of the venues. It either has to be a medical or a religious exemption. Now, if they want to see about petitioning for a religious exemption and framing it that way, they could do that and it would be reviewed.
Okay. And again, I don't want to belabor it. We'll talk about it with you individually because argumentative on her end, you know?
And
so,
yeah, understood. And Lori, before I get to your question, I just want to make sure, and we're trying to figure out where to put the FAQ. Oh, and here we have it here as well. So this FAQ, I had sent to the VPSSs and then asked them to go on ahead and share it with key staff. And so just make sure that if you haven't gotten this, make sure to print it out or have a copy because it will be useful in answering some of the questions that you may have. Lori?
Yes, hi, thank you. So just to clarify then, so those who have an exemption for religious beliefs,
or medical.
I was going to say that. They are able to be on campus, take in-person classes, but people who are unvaccinated for other reasons won't qualify for an exemption and they're forced to only be online. Is that what you're saying?
They are restricted, right, for just only online classes and services.
Why is that? Why? It's because it's a pandemic issue. It's addressing the safety.
It's addressing the safety measures and following practices that are standard for what is allowed for an exemption. So we're really going by the exemption rule.
Oh, I understand that.
And that is, again, keeping a level of safety as well.
Okay, you're freezing a little bit. I didn't mean to jump in. No, it's okay. We can't help that. So I understand following the guidelines for what qualifies for as an exemption, but it seems then other people then are, if they have a non-religious but deeply held belief, they then are restricted to only online. But then, okay, so I just wanted to clarify that. So those who qualify for the religious exemption, I assume that's faculty or employees as well, they're allowed to be on campus. And then I'm remembering from the Dr. Moreno's briefing a couple weeks ago, I think it was Ms. Billy spoke, that essentially a letter will go home to those who have an approved exemption indicating, I think she said four things in the letter. They would be encouraged to social distance and encouraged to wear a mask. But
they would be required to continue to wear a mask. They would be encouraged to social distance, and they would be required to go through weekly COVID testing.
Okay, and then the question that I know faculty and employees have had is enforcement of that. But now that the board has kind of on top of that, now that the board has allowed for exemptions, and I think we're going to get to this later, a real need for universal masking.
And I'll just go back to, again, mm-hmm. you're hearing my professional opinion that, you know, the public health departments have really banded together and they're the experts. And from my position, I think that their metrics are justifiable. They're balanced as we look at that piece.
But most of the public health reports that I've been seeing, and maybe I'm wrong, are indicating if you are working in an environment that is fully vaccinated, then it's optional. If you're working in an environment where we're permitting unvaccinated people for whatever great reasons they may have, then masks are what are recommended. That's my understanding.
Yeah, and I'll add one more qualifier, Lori, when you're looking at herd immunity. And so we are looking at a highly vaccinated community when we're said and done with that. Okay. So I'm just going to add that one more metric to that conversation.
Well, do we know yet?
We won't know yet.
What?
In terms of the numbers, because the attestation is happening right now, in terms of the number of medical exemptions, the number of religious exemptions we'll have. So we don't know that metric yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we will know pretty soon. I would say, you know, certainly before December is over, we'll have a good understanding.
Okay. So I'd like to move us now to the constituent reports. Thanks so much, Ray, for being here with us. So now let's go on to those constituent group updates. Masao has his hand up. Okay, go on ahead, Masao. I'm sorry.
Well, I just had two comments. One is that with the Delta variant, from my reading of epidemiologists, Ray, since you mentioned herd immunity, we may need something more like 90% of vaccination rates as opposed to lower earlier estimates, which of course we're nowhere near. And then the second problem is the issue of having just the unvaccinated students being masked, because that puts in effect an onus on them if they're feeling like they're the only masked people. And so beyond whether or not they want to wear a mask or not, there'll be, you know, there's pressure to try and blend in. And the way you blend in is you don't wear your mask. And anyway, so I would prefer to have, again, if we're going to have exemptions, then we should have universal indoor masking. And I don't think that it causes pedagogical issues among the students to wear, especially a surgical mask, it's not a heavy burden. That's all.
Thanks, Ms. Sarrow. So I'd like to move on now to the constituent group updates. And I know Jessica had emailed out what AFT would like to present today. These are a series of recommendations. We sunshine those today. So I want to have a discussion on everything that's there. And then in our next committee meeting, which will be now that first Thursday, the second, we can vote on these recommendations. So I want to turn it over to Jessica and Lori for AFT. If you would like to share your screen and walk us through those, that would be great.
Oh, sure. Hi, everyone. I'm actually going to put the document in the chat.
And I can share my screen too, if you want me to, Jessica. So let me know.
I think I'm going to let folks view it on their own and just talk through the points.
Okay.
Without a screen share. Sure. Thank you, everyone, for the time today. So the recommendations that we have to present today reflect the joint concerns of AFTA and CSEA bargaining groups and our collaboration. And these have been culled and prioritized from data received by AFT's recent survey of Skyline faculty, as well as feedback that we also get as faculty from Classified. We feel the recommendations are all the more important as a result of the more than 60 positive exposures reported in our district and the board's vote last week to allow the religious exemption for students. So we hope that at our next meeting on December 2nd, we can vote on some of these recommendations. But today, Joe Morello thought it would be better to have our discussion piece. So the recommendation that we heard the most from faculty was that face masks, as we've discussed, should continue to be worn indoors by all people present on campus, regardless of vaccination status or the state or county orders through the end of the spring semester. And then faculty have given us kind of the rationale for this decision. We heard a huge amount from them and I've tried to sort of condense it into about maybe 8 sentences. And then I think we can stop and discuss and then I can read the next recommendation. Is that Joe, is that, yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. So the main thing that we heard was, as Masao said, that it's not practical or equitable to make a mask requirement for unvaccinated but not vaccinated students and employees. Next, we heard from scientists mostly that the CDC continues to recommend indoor masking for communities like ours with substantial transmissions, and that really that vaccines are not enough. And one of our physics professors has been sharing a Harvard study that kind of talks about the stigma of some people wearing masks and some not, and about the sole reliance on vaccination as not necessarily being the wisest way to go about things. The other thing we heard from faculty is that it's not illegal for our district to take precautions above what the county or state advises. The state chancellor has given each college district the authority to make these types of decisions as long as they don't violate any laws. The next one was that the cancellation of the mask mandate would make folks more worried and anxious, and we have seen some staff and faculty quit, and we don't want to lose any more good employees. And kind of the last thing that we heard is that even if it's the board that makes the policy decision, it's still our responsibility as employees to let key administrative groups like our district safety committee know of our experiences working on the ground and our concerns for the future. And that sometimes part of our work as employees involves educating our board and our administrators. All right, thank you.
So any feedback for Jessica on that, right? And we don't want to debate, I mean, feedback like, you know, potential changes or this is what I like, this is what I can support, things like that.
And I'll just put the recommendation, this first one, in the chat as well.
So Masao, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I already spoke on the masking thing, but I have a broader concern too about the interest and willingness of students to come back on campus. Can I share my screen?
I guess. I'm trying to keep us on track so we can get through all.
Yeah, I can do it. It's just
be quick.
Yeah, I'm just showing you my WebSmart enrollment for next semester, and I have two face-to-face classes, Econ 100, which you see at the top. They have 5 and 6 enrolled, and then I have an online 2 sections of 102, which have 26 and 23 enrolled, which, given we're 2 months before, are going to fill before, the start date. And, I'm honestly a little worried about if the face-to-face classes are going to fill. I mean, this is a huge, it's 4-to-1 or 5-to-1 discrepancy. So I just think we need to try and make the face-to-face classes as safe as possible, or we're not going to have the students in them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So Jessica, I think now Lori, are you going to speak?
I was very impressed with the number of concerns from faculty and employees about continuing social distancing and masks. It is prevalent in our data just as recent as last week.
So Jessica, why don't we go to number 2?
All right, just putting it in the chat. Faculty have asked overwhelmingly for enhanced reporting of COVID positive cases and transmissions on publicly available online dashboard system that's updated as soon as positive cases are known. We know that the district has struggled to keep its COVID exposures page up to date, recently adding about 40 cases that took place before the summer that the majority of us were not aware of. And we also heard that faculty wanted positive cases reported as soon as they're heard of. People sent us examples of the dashboard at Berkeley. I'll put it in the chat here. And they also sent us an article from the Chronicle of Higher Ed about what should be on a dashboard. And then we heard that, like the Berkeley example, they want to know what room in the building the exposure took place. And they want the language of saying there's no known transmissions on campus to be talked about as positive cases. Mm-hmm. And that's because without the robust tracing or knowledge of a student's vaccination status for the present and for the next at least couple months, it can't currently be determined where transmissions have or have not occurred. So to say that they're not on campus when we're not doing testing, a lot of faculty felt that was misleading. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jessica. If I can add a little bit to that, is that all right? Yeah, just that the exposure report, it doesn't seem to meet the need. And a lot of employees have students, their own kids in schools, and the K-12 districts, if you have a positive case at a school, it's an immediate notification to the family. And we don't do anything of a sort, and it's many clicks down below. I don't think anyone even knows or looks at the number of positive cases that we've had. And if we're not doing testing, and if we don't know who's vaccinated and who's not, how can you do contact tracing? And the many dozens that we've had, it's even hard to know that we can say that there's no transmission. So I think a dashboard of at least just where we are with cases, following one or two models of that are used by other colleges or universities would be a really good step. And I think it would give a good feeling to the campus, to the college, to the community, where we are, you know, and also maybe the vaccination rate of our campus, if we can even know that. That's what other communities have. Thank you.
Community members, anyone with follow-up questions, anything at all related to that? Does Ray, if you're, and I don't know if Ray's still on. Oh, Ray said, thank you. I'll look at the examples. Thanks for sharing. Oh. Ray, could you walk? Oh, Musa has his hand up too, because I was going to ask Ray to walk through the process of contact tracing and all that, but go on ahead, Musa.
Oh, actually, I did raise this point last meeting of, you know, the community, the citizens, the faculty, staff, and students' right to know. We have the right to know what's happening, the number of cases, where they are. And actually, I was about to raise a question to Ray, which is, what would be like the limits of reporting that to all of us without invading the, you know, the privacy of our students? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the classroom, I teach face-to-face right now, and many times I get the question, is it safe? Are we safe here? You know, it's really wrong of me not to be able to answer that. You know, I should be able to say, you know, we don't have any cases on campus, or we have a few and they are isolated, or, you know, I just need to be informed. It's very hard for me to you know, to say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I can go ahead and respond to that. So really, you're right. It's the right to know in terms of HIPAA regulations, in terms of FERPA, but more so HIPAA. And so these examples are great because everything is evolving. So as stated, I'll take a look at these here and then have conversations and certainly recommendations to that. And as we have more people coming on campus, again, what is the need to know and for what reasons? And those are really the pieces when you're looking at HIPAA regulations where those conversations take place. So I'm copying all of these links and I'm gonna be taking a look at them closely. Thank you.
And Ray, a quick question. Could you walk through your contact tracing process just so that people have an understanding of how that works? If you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem. I just had to get myself off mute. Just trying to get to one of them. There we go. And I apologize if I haven't done it with this. I know I've done it in some of the health and safety committee meetings, but may not have actually gone through, it sounds like, here. So I apologize for that. So both for students and for the employees, but I'll just stick here to the student side here, that investigating, reporting, and responding to COVID cases, there's a link there. And then we've made a decision tree that really is following the county guidelines in terms of what needs to happen and who needs to be contacted following the HIPAA regulations here. And so here it is in the chat. And Jessica says that I have done it. Excellent. I appreciate knowing that. As I said, I'm never sure. I always try to be overly redundant. But here is the decision tree, and we're really looking at four different decisions ultimately, and I'll just go through it very quickly, but I have you really look into it. And of course, the program, the COVID-19 program prevention plan goes into more detail, but these are really the need to know pieces that most people are looking for. So regardless if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, if you're symptomatic, isolate. We want you off campus. If you're on campus, if you haven't come to campus, stay home and test. And so testing would tell us, especially that we're coming into the winter months, whether somebody is COVID positive or negative. If they're positive, we follow the same standards of isolation for 10 days. And then of course, at that time, I would do the tracing. I'll talk about that just in a little bit. But if somebody is negative, and here again is the piece, and really what the balance is we are gonna have people who are gonna have fever. We are gonna have people who are gonna be coughing. That doesn't necessarily mean it's COVID, but again, we want to make sure that anybody who has any symptoms that are related to COVID to stay home first and then figure out what's going on. And so if they do get a negative COVID test, the difference is it's not isolation for 10 days. It's really that symptoms are improving and then that fever has been absent for 24 hours. And that's something I would just say as individuals, as employees, as students, we've not been very good at. We come to work, we take cold medicine, but really we should be staying home when we're symptomatic and feverish. The second, of course, if you do test positive, doesn't matter whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, isolation for 10 days. And then if there's been an exposure, so first step is when somebody reports that somebody is either symptomatic, positive, or exposed, then if there's an exposure, we don't, at this point in time, we don't send exposures home right off the bat. We want to know whether they're vaccinated or unvaccinated. So certainly if you're symptomatic or positive, we want you off campus, we want you to stay home. If somebody's exposed, and the important key element is what the definition of exposure is. And so it's looking at closer than 6 feet for greater than 15 minutes in a 24-hour period, regardless of face covering wearing. And so that's the first element. And so then that group of folks, let's assume it's in a classroom, and it's a student or a faculty member who ended up testing positive, then as of right now, I go in and I trace and find out who's been in the exposure. So if you're in a large room, and even though you've been in there for more than 15 minutes, if you did not, you were not closer than 6 feet, you would not be considered an exposure. Okay? If you were on the same floor, but weren't in the room, you would not be considered an exposure. But if you are considered an exposure, then we look at, are you vaccinated or unvaccinated? And if you're unvaccinated, then you go into quarantine for 10 days, monitor for symptoms, recommended tests, but not required. And then I'll go through, well, how does somebody get out of that quarantine? So I would notice them, and they would be directed to go into quarantine following county directives. If they're fully vaccinated, they are still notified, and this has been a question that comes up constantly. Well, are you notifying the fully vaccinated? The answer is yes. They're exempt from quarantine, but they symptom monitor for 14 days, and they're recommended but not required to get COVID testing. And so there's no restrictions for that group. Anybody who's either been directed to isolate or to quarantine, then they would need to respond to the email that I sent to them after that period, or just at the end of the period, and acknowledge that they followed the directives, they've completed those directives, and their symptoms are either have improved or none, and they've had no fever for 24 hours. A COVID test is not required to return. So once they self-attest, then they're officially released. Who's notified? Only those individuals who are identified as an exposure are notified. And then if this is in a classroom, then the instructor is notified of that process so that they know who it was and what the time frame was. And then the supervisor of that area, usually the dean, right? And I know the question last time here or elsewhere was asked, well, what about high volume areas where it's transient? And so we usually are finding, again, who's been implicated in that in terms of exposure, and then somebody who's responsible in that area. But otherwise, no one else is notified. Okay. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Ray. Ms. Sal, you got your hand up, and then Jessica, I'll go to you to your the third one, I promise.
Oh, thanks, Joe. No, I just had a question for Ray. Given the 10-day isolation policy, if you test positive for COVID, is the district going to continue to have any special sick leave for COVID-possible people?
Melissa,
that's like two months of class.
And so, Melissa, I know that, you know, human resources has been looking at what the current regulations are. And my understanding right now is that the required COVID non-sick time, non-vacation time is no longer in effect.
You know, I think I have a briefing on Friday, and Marie Billy will be there, our Chief Human Resources Officer. I'm going to put that on the list of questions, because I think this is also part of sort of this flexible concept where if you're having a quarantine, but you feel well enough to work, then you can work remotely and wouldn't have to take your sick time. But I would like to pose that question to Marie on Friday. Thank you.
Rory?
Yeah, I just was thinking, you know, a lot of raised comments just speak to the need for a dashboard where people can be notified of positive cases, because many of these, you know, high occupancy areas, they're new to campus, they're not our students, they're in a cafeteria, they're in the library. We don't know these people, you know, and we're, because of the nature of the campus. And we just need open, transparent notification to everybody, either through a campus email, positive case on, you know, on such and such a date, in a timely manner. The other thing that's a little confusing is the low, moderate, none, and then I think there's even minimal risk of transmission or exposure. And I think that's a little unclear. I think the 15-minute exposure guideline went out with Delta variant over the summer. So
Lori, that hasn't gone out. That still is a county and state requirement. So, okay. So I just want to make sure that people are aware, and it's not a statement that's being made here. Uh-huh. That's really not consistent and accurate with the county and state guidelines directives. Okay.
And I know also of people who are vaccinated who test positive, people like myself risk blindness because of underlying conditions, just with being asymptomatic. So to me, we're still looking at, I understand the guidelines, but to speak to the earlier point of, we are completely free to make better guidelines to ensure the safety of vulnerable people on our pop and our campus.
Yeah. And so that I would say is an accurate statement, but to say that the 15 minutes went out, that's an incorrect statement, because that still is a standard at the county and state level. So I just want to make that distinction. Okay.
No, I hear you. It's challenging. Mm-hmm.
Lucia, and then I want to get back to Jessica so we can go through the third.
Hi, sorry, this will be quick. So if a student lets us know that they're positive for COVID-19 and they tell us, we tell the deans, and then the deans will tell the rest of the class, or is the instructor going to tell the rest of the class? So how do we inform in that way? I just wanted to,
right here.
Okay.
Report to your supervisor, or the student reports to the instructor, and then in turn you report to your supervisor and simultaneously report to me. So I will be the person will enact the tracing, right? The tracing protocols. Okay.
Okay. So I wasn't sure which of the two. And then the second question is, if the instructor gets C19, are they also allowed to teach remotely? Just curious. I just saw that.
Let me take a stab at that one. As far as I know, an instructor who tests positive or becomes ill, who's teaching in person, will be treated as if they have an illness like any other time in our history when an instructor is ill. We will not be moving an in-person class all of a sudden to an online format. And then we would have to get a substitute, or we might have to cancel a class until the instructor is better. You know, so we will not be changing modality if an instructor gets sick.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Jessica.
Okay, great.
And if I could make a suggestion on this one, number three, read all the way through, because there's an A, B, C, D, and E. And when we vote on the recommendation, I would separate those out and vote on A, B, C, D, and E separately for each. So it's not, that way if someone disagrees with one part of it, they're not voting it all down at one time. So please go on ahead.
Sure. So this is, let me just put it in the chat. Click here, sorry. So this is recommending additional safeguards to be prepared and implemented to protect both employees and students alike, whose work includes meeting face-to-face with those whose vaccination status is unknown to them. So some faculty will be going in Banner and finding out this kind of information. Other faculty don't use Banner and don't teach, such as non-instructional folks. Faculty have let us know that they recommend, first of all, that occupancy levels for classrooms be reduced to allow for social distancing, which employees can proactively encourage. Since class size is generally considered outside of the scope of this committee, room occupancy changes for the purpose of safety is within our charge. The second, we heard from many employees that we still needed better signage that includes those questions of symptoms, you know, how do you feel? And also where to obtain masks, including during evening hours, that those signs go around campus. The district's COVID website is not specific as to where to obtain masks after hours, like when division offices are closed. And that the signage reminders are useful for everyone to think twice, you know, before entering buildings. The third point was about monitoring. So a lot of faculty and staff have asked that we monitor the high traffic buildings, and the buildings that were suggested were buildings 3, 5, 6 and Pack Heights. And then the monitoring is to enforce the district's policies related to COVID. As you know, we're open to the public, which puts employees at risk. So without a system of monitoring or checkpoints, like we had for a while, a few months ago, or enforcement of our safety mandates, there's really nothing to stop students or members of the public from accessing our services. So monitoring, faculty believe, would mitigate this risk. We also got a lot of comments that our district can afford to hire extra personnel. It was mentioned before that, you know, this extra thing would be hard to staff, but we do know that this money has been made available by the federal government for colleges, and that we also know that our district is one of the wealthier districts in California with a substantial budget reserve. The next two points have to do with access to up-to-date filtration and ventilation information in each indoor room or area where people work or gather. So our current building by building ventilation reports are very general. They don't mention air scrubbers or HEPA filtration. And so what that means is that employees are uncertain about their workspaces, whether they need to request a work site assessment in order to get better filtration. And we'd like to have information for each room available on a website so faculty can just, and other employees can just go on and check. The last point is very much related. The process for obtaining HEPA filtration devices for your workspace or classroom is pretty cumbersome right now. So for folks who are in classrooms or other windowless spaces, I think the process is first you have to let your supervisor know you want a device, and then that triggers a request for the worksite assessment. Then you have to wait for that to be scheduled. You have to wait for that to be done. And then that recommendation, I think, goes yet to another group to decide whether you'll get the filtration, the HEPA filter or not. And so what we want is, as our K-12 public schools are doing, that portable filtration devices should be readily available for employees who request them. And just, I wanted to just say one last point that kind of applies as related to all of these five points, is that some of our employees will have had their accommodation to work from home denied. However, they will nonetheless be on campus and really remain at higher risk of ill effects from COVID than others. And that our employees and our students really deserve protection beyond the minimum requirements established by our county or our state or by Cal OSHA. Thank you.
Is there any feedback on those recommendations. Lucia, you have your hand up. Is that from the last time or is it a new comment?
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
No reason to, I do it all the time. So please don't apologize. Brian Tepper.
Yeah, I think it was the first recommendation where we talk about class size versus spacing or occupancy.
Brian, you're going in and out.
It's more bargaining unit. I have a real...
Brian, we lost you.
Time reconciling or using.
So Brian, we're.
Can you hear me now, Joe?
Okay, try again. I heard the last sentence perfectly. Brian.
By the nature of what they cover and don't cover, by the nature of the kind of gas they.
Okay, so I'm going to call back on Brian again. We've lost.
Hey, Joe.
Oh.
Can you hear me now?
That sounds better. Just start talking. On what you know.
Joe.
Okay, now I heard it. Start talking again.
Okay. Yeah. So I have a tough time using. Or sparsing occupancy versus what was probably a bargaining unit agreement as far as class size. I don't think we should be using the occupancy of a space as an alternative method for working around a bargaining unit.
Okay. Got it. Wyatt.
Hello. I just have a question as far as the point when it comes to monitoring the high traffic areas. What protocols are going to be put in place to try to monitor those areas? And also, what protocols are going to be put into place to make sure that we uphold the restrictions for those who... are not vaccinated and didn't get the exemptions approved, because this is a community college and the community is still going to come. So I'm just confused about all these things we want to enforce, but it's like we're talking about it and we're not talking about, okay, these are the ways we're going to enforce it. So that's been my question about that, especially in the high traffic areas, because I don't see that as a possibility unless you have somebody in front of the doors or how we had at the beginning. There was only one way coming into the campus and one way going out, and the security did the checkpoint. Are we going to go back to that when spring starts? I hope I was clear with my question.
I think you were, and I think it's more the question on the recommendation where it says monitoring. What specifically are you looking for in terms of that term? What exactly does it mean? So it's John and then Lori. I want to be mindful of the time. It's 3:28.
Yep.
So John, please go on ahead.
Yeah, I just want to let Jessica and everyone know that we will be putting out for access our HVAC. For each room. Hopefully that will come out soon. And then more of a procedural thing, Jessica and AFT and CSEA did ask for purifiers and more signage. Now, Joe, those kind of recommendations, does that go to the district safety committee, or what is the procedure now for all of us?
Yeah, we're going to take these recommendations, whatever is approved by the committee, it'll go to the district safety committee first.
Oh, okay. So Jessica, we'll get back to you after this gets through the district safety committee, okay?
And Lori?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to, Wyatt's comment came up at a good time. I think what we're doing, Jessica and I, with the AFT and looking at employee concerns, is to affirm an issue in terms of the occupancy, high occupancy areas. It's not so much the devil in the details of how do you do it, but I think we feel a responsibility to identify a need for that consideration, that we need to, you know, recommend some consideration of occupancy. Social distancing is part of that. It remains high on people's minds who are working in tight spaces, lots of people, and as you say, members of the community. And that's, I don't think that's going to change, you know. So how can we best protect those who are here? That's it. So yeah, it was just a recommendation.
All right, everyone. So it's 3:30. We've sunshined these recommendations at this meeting. What we will be doing is I will ask AFT if they have any modifications or changes. We will send these out prior to our next meeting, and then we'll need to take action on this, an up or down vote on the recommendations that have come forward. A reminder, that meeting based on our decision today will be on Thursday, December 2nd. It'll be from 12:45 to 2:05. I want to apologize to Marco because you got filibustered out of your item, the exercise program, and I'll make sure that we get to it. We were also going to talk about committee membership and charge, but we'll defer that until we have time at another meeting. I want to make you all aware that Dr. Moreno has her return to campus briefings. Those are each Friday, and the link to that is in the agenda. So I'd encourage you all, because there are a lot of good questions that come here that we aren't able to answer. Please, if you're able to, go to the next briefing. It's this Friday at 1 o'clock. And I know the Zoom information comes out from MCPR. It's the 19th and December 3rd. Thank you, Dr. Moreno, from 1 to 2. And that link gives you the previous recordings and questions that were answered after that. So I'd encourage everyone to take advantage of those briefings as well. And that is the end of our agenda today. I want to thank everyone for your time and effort and attention. And this meeting is now adjourned. Thank you so much.